All right, I do want to dedicate the learning tonight to Yecheskel ben Yitzchak Dov Halevi. That's my mother's father. It's his yahrzeit tonight. We talked a bit last week. We introduced beforehand like different kinds of way of learning, EU and everything. So this shiur that I prepared, if I were to put it into the constellation of a YU shiur, so if last week, this may mean nothing to any of you, but it means something to me. If last week was Rav Rosenzweig style, so this is Rav Schechter style. If you ever listen to a shiur by Rav Schechter, he could have been a talk show host. Uh-huh. He just, when he talks, it just flows out and it's always interesting. But he jumps from topic to topic. He doesn't typically, and I was in the shiur only a few times, the Gemara shiur, but you can tell already just by listening to his Parsha shiur. It's the same way, you know, if he says, okay, we're learning this daf, it's not like he picks a line and says, okay, we're going to talk about this line for the next 3 hours. That's not what he does. He says, we're doing this daf, you're going to do the whole daf. And he's going to spend about 10 minutes on each section, and he'll mention the more important yedios, what he says, you know, the things that are good for you to know. So we're going to be doing, you know, about basically an amud, a little bit, of really important Gemara. But we're not going to drill too deeply into anything. I'm going to show you some highlights of some thoughts mostly amongst the Achronim, really. But we're going to drill down a little bit into the Rambam that comes out. Okay, we're talking tonight about both Pidyon HaBen and the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Okay, if you remember last time, we talked about mostly, what did we talk about last week? Remember? Brit Mila. Right? The general theme over here based on the Mishnah is parenting, family matters, obligations of a father towards his son, and that's where we're going to continue with that, with the two topics tonight, with Pidyon HaBen and Talmud Torah. So we're at the bottom, I'd say about 12 lines up, the two dots, it says Minalan. Okay? It says Liftoto Minalan. Liftoto Minalan, we're in Kafter Amar Aleph. Everybody with me? Yeah?
Yeah.
Kaftar Amin Aleph, 12 lines up, Liftoto. Okay, the Mishnah says that a father has an obligation. Actually, the Mishnah doesn't say it. The Gemara said that one of the obligations that a father has towards his son, that a mother doesn't have, is to do the Pidyon HaBen. Okay, to pay 5 shekel, 5 slaim to Simon Cohen and have him buy your son, and then he'll give it back to you under the table. About 30 minutes later.
I've got 5 reels.
So he has. The truth is, he won't give it back because he's going to give it to you, and then you're going to give it to him.
But it must be sachil.
Sachil.
The silver coins have to be.
They have a print engraved.
Minted.
Has to be currency.
Minted.
No. Accepted as currency, not valid currency. Poor now. What's it called now?
Currency.
Legal tender.
Legal tender, yeah.
So he should have a baby boy.
Yeah.
Silver coins from England, which are still actually legal tender.
Yeah?
They
have the Queen's face on him?
Yes.
I was joking.
Which queen?
No, sorry. It has Prince.
Or any Prince Charles. Yeah, it's like a silver eagle in the US.
Wow. But he's a baby boy. And my dad.
I'll bring one to show tomorrow morning.
All right, all right.
My dad is giving him the coin.
Will you bring one?
Good. Good. Yeah, okay, so the Gemara says, Livdoto, and it wants to know, Minalan. Minalan, how do we know that a father has an obligation to do the Pidyon HaBen for his son? Minalan. Dechtiv, kol b'chor b'necha tifta. There you go. Pretty simple. Mishnah. Pasuk in Shmot, in Parshat Kitisa, when it talks about the beginning of the Levium's transfer with the Bechorot. So it says, kol b'chor b'necha tifta. V'hecha delo parki avua, Mechayev ihu l'mefarkei. What does that mean? Where the father didn't take care of it, if he didn't buy, then ihu mechayev ihu l'mefarkei. Ihu means him. So the son himself, when he grows up, he has to take care of the Pidyon HaBen. The story goes that the Gra was not convinced ever that a person really was a Kohen. Like he said, nobody really has real yichus. So for his whole life, he was apparently, I guess he was a Bechor. Although wait a second. He wasn't. I don't think he was before. So how does the story work? Well, we'll look into that. But basically, he used to go around being poed to himself with every Kohen that he met. He would give 5 slides to every Kohen that he met because he wasn't sure ever if it had been done. Maybe it was that he did it for his... I think he had an older brother.
Maybe he did it for his brother.
I'm pretty sure he had an older brother, so maybe he did it for his son. Got to look into that. I think he had an older brother who died at a young age who was supposedly greater than he was. At least that's what he said. Anyways, Mechayev iul lemefirke dechtiv pado tifte. How do we know that the child has to be po to himself? Because it says pado tifte. What's pado tifte? What does that tell you? How does that tell you that it's the son? Because whenever you have a double lashon, it means that you have to, you know, go to extra lengths to do it. So it's the father who has to do it, but if he doesn't do it, then the son has to do it. It has to be done. Pado tifte. Ve'echa de lo parke avua. Sorry. V'ihi minalan de lo mifkade. What's ihi?
She.
She. Right? Iu is he. Ihi is she. Simple. Ihi, how do we know that the mother does not have to be poda her son? Dechtiv tipade. It says tipade. Right? They put in a yud over there. That's not in the Torah. It's just showing you that it should be pronounced tipade and tifde. Now, what exactly is going on over here? It's the same word. It's
different tenses.
Right, so which one is it though? Right?
One is active, one is passive.
So it's based on, yeah, but it's based on the pasuk. It's we say it one way in the Torah. So it says upetach amar tifdeh besev, v'lo tifdeh v'arafto, kol bo nohar menecha, tifdeh, v'lo yeru penai reka. Right? It's written and it's read tifdeh. There's no kriyot chtiv over here. But nevertheless, it could potentially be read as tipadeh. Right? It could be read tipadeh and tifdeh. And therefore, what do we learn from that? Kol shemitzuveh lifdot et atzmo, mitzuveh lifdot et acherim. Anybody who has an obligation to redeem himself or herself, potentially, has an obligation to redeem others. But kol she'eino mitzuveh lifdot et atzmo, eino mitzuveh lifdot acherim. In order to be in the game, you have to be there on both sides. You have to be both obligated to do it for yourself, and then you'll be obligated to do it for others.
Now, if there's no obligation, does that mean you're not allowed to, or you're just not obligated to? If the mother decides, well, I'm going to be poed in my son.
That's a good question.
Because the father is not around.
L'chore, it's a monetary transaction, and anybody can do it. Anybody can do it for you on your behalf as well. So it should be able to work, but it's a good question. V'ihim inalan de lo mechaiva, the mifraka, sorry, v'ihim inalan, good, that tells you, though, that because she's not obligated to do it for herself, so she's not obligated to do it for her son. But that begs the question, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. What? All we said so far is that a mother, does not have to be poda to her son, because the only people that have to be poda to others are people who have to be nifta themselves. What question does that lead to?
Well, maybe. Female kohanim.
Yeah, well, maybe, not female Kohanim, yeah, but no, maybe female Yisraelim Bechorot. Yeah. Maybe she herself has to be redeemed.
Just as Bechor.
Oh. So, how do we know that she doesn't have to be poed to herself? Now it gets confusing. It says, well, that's obvious, because the only people who have to be redeemed themselves are people who others have to redeem them. You follow? The only people who have to redeem themselves are people who have to be redeemed by others. But people who don't have to be redeemed by others don't have to redeem themselves. Well, now we've got ourselves into a pickle, mm-hmm. Right? So now we've just kicked the can down the road. So now what's our new question? How do we know that nobody needs to redeem the girl, right? The mother, the daughter, whatever. How do we know that? Because if we know that, then we can figure everything out. And that is easy. The core pasuk that tells you that you have to do this is called b'chor banecha tifdeh. So that's a pasuk that's addressing the father, telling him that he has to be poed to his son, and it's exclusively his son and not his daughter. So if we were to roll this back, the way that it's supposed to go is like this. A son needs to be redeemed by his father, and if the father doesn't redeem him, then he needs to redeem himself. How do we know that? Because anybody who has to be redeemed by others needs to redeem himself. On the other hand, a mother does not have to redeem her son. Why not? Because she herself doesn't need to be redeemed by her father. And how do we know that she doesn't need to be redeemed by her father? Because her father doesn't have to redeem her. Okay, so because her father doesn't have to redeem her, that means she doesn't have to be redeemed herself. And because she doesn't have to be redeemed herself, she doesn't have to redeem her son. Are we all good?
Now, when the
that's
the
way that works.
When the son redeems himself, he has to be a gadol.
Don't pick yourself up by your own laces.
For a son to redeem himself, does he have to be a gadol?
Can he perform
so.
A monetary transaction?
Again, it seems to be a monetary transaction. I can't be sure. I can't say confidently, but I don't think he would have to be a gadol.
Now, this concept is it?
He might, because he can't make the kinyan.
Uh-huh. It's not specific to redeeming, is it?
In what sense?
Because
in general.
Why doesn't it flow through with a brit?
So it seems like it is. Oh,
well,
in what sense?
Because we had the whole discussion about the brit. Why didn't we just give this answer?
Right, so no, it doesn't. It's only for this. It's only for Pidyon HaBen. Yeah. Yeah.
How would someone know if they needed to redeem themselves? In other words,
they used to wear a chain or anything.
Are you asking a technical question or based on the...
No, it's a technical question.
If they knew that their father... What do you mean? A bechor needs to redeem himself. It needs to be redeemed.
So
his father
didn't
know
that he wasn't redeemed.
That should be a conversation between father and son, whether or not that happened.
No, if the father's not around, the father's...
So then, I mean, listen, it's not the hardest thing to be machmir, but... I mean, somebody should remember whether there is a pidyon HaBen.
That's what happened plenty, 70 years ago.
What? That people didn't know?
They
in the Holocaust?
They didn't know they were before you.
Yeah, but it was a C-section. No, I'm saying that the child was born, the child was 2 years old at the time of the Holocaust.
Right.
It must have been Holocaust.
Well, it happens at 31 days.
Yeah.
It must be confusing that he wouldn't know if it was time or not.
No, he wouldn't know.
There's no harm redeeming yourself twice.
No.
Could you just go to it again? It felt to me like we were picking ourselves up by our laces.
You were. I mean, no, there's definitely a bootstrapping over there. The bootstrapping goes like this. Let's go backwards. The pasuk kol b'chor ben achatif. Let's go from the women's perspective. Forget about the sons for now. The pasuk kol b'chor ben achatif tells you that the father only has an obligation to redeem his son. That tells you that his daughter doesn't have to redeem even herself, because only people who have to be redeemed by others need to be redeemed themselves.
But hang on, that's the part that's not followed. Only people who have to be redeemed by others have to redeem themselves.
Because potentially, we could have said, okay, this Rashi actually addresses this.
We're talking about her redeeming her son, not herself.
Right, no, that's where we're going to get to eventually. Okay, so let's go that way, okay? A father definitely has to redeem his son, and a son definitely has to redeem himself if his father doesn't redeem him, right?
Right.
What's left? Well, maybe the mother also has to redeem her son. But we don't know otherwise. Maybe the mother has an obligation to redeem her son. Why not? Son has to be redeemed. Why doesn't she have a special obligation? The answer to that is because she herself, right, doesn't have anybody that has to redeem... Sorry, because... No,
she doesn't redeem herself.
Because she doesn't have to redeem herself, so therefore, she doesn't have to redeem her son.
Is that a kal v'chomer, or is that a gzeirah shav? What is that? That, I think, is like the weak link in the logic.
Well, there's two of them, right? There's two of those. There's two of those logical points.
I think the tipa der, as in you have to do it yourself,
yeah.
And therefore...
Yeah,
therefore,
right.
If you don't have to do it yourself, you
right,
don't
that's where it starts.
Else.
Right, that's where it starts. Tipa der and tifta, exactly.
That seems a bit of a... Is that a gzera shav, or is that... What's
no, called? It's not a gzera shav, it's one word. It's one word that they're making a drasha. And in fact... It's actually a difficult drasha. It's even more difficult than you think, because Rashi says tifadeh tifdeh tomar karibay tifadeh, right? But we don't read it tifadeh.
Right.
So actually, so the Ran over here says, yeah, this is not a kriyuktiv. That's not, and it's not a mikra mesoret, because neither one. I mean, it's just tifdeh, right?
It's
he just says because potentially the pasuk could have been written that way, and the word itself could be read that way. Therefore, it has to be, whatever the halacha is, has to fit into both meanings of the word. I don't know how many places something like that shows up in Shas, but this is one.
Okay.
I honestly can't say. Okay.
Rav Danny?
Yeah.
There's a question over here as to whether...
I remember something that if a child hadn't had his bijon, the father wasn't around.
Mm-hmm.
He would walk around with a chain or whatever else, either with the coins or not with the coins, whatever else, So that the bar mitzvah for everyone in the kilo would be a known thing that he had been able.
You think that
would be able to?
You think that somebody would, you know, who would just redeem it?
Why does the kilo have to know that he's been?
No, that was the thing. I think it was a thing. I can't remember where this is from. But
in that case, I'm just, they should.
It was about that he had to redeem himself. No, how can you redeem? I think the point is.
Yeah, it may be
how
that.
How can you redeem someone else's child?
You say with the Brit that it falls on the community. Yeah.
Right, so I don't know whether this falls on the community or not.
You can't redeem someone who's not yours, so the child has to redeem himself in place of his father. Right.
So what is
the why? It's not the father doesn't owe to the Kohen. The child itself belongs.
The child was made to serve.
Okay, sorry, you're right.
The child was made to serve.
That is the same.
Wasn't that the original?
Whatever the reason is.
So what does the necklace accomplish in that case?
It was
somebody should, when he gets a bar mitzvah, so then he's supposed to open up the necklace, take the coins out, and give it to the Kohen.
I
don't know. It probably is a custom in some countries. I don't know that.
Never work in Africa.
That part
goes. Necklace would grab your chain.
Okay.
You live in Africa. You need to get kids to egg on for one.
And if you don't redeem yourself, it's a lab. It's a what?
No, there's an obligation. It's a chov, really, right? If you think about it, it's a chov. It's like not paying back a loan, right? You have a monetary obligation to be redeemed. What happens if you don't?
I mean,
you don't know what happens.
I've never seen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some point. Okay.
Yeah. Now, Tana Rabbana, who livdot, ubno livdot, who kodem livno. Interesting. What happens? Let's just make this simple. What happens if you only have five slime? That's it.
Sorry to just digress. What's the punishment for someone?
There's no punishment. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah taseh, and there's a chov, but there's no punishment as far as I know. Tana Rabbana, who livdot, vno livdot, who kodem livno. What happens if you only have five slaim total, and you know that you have not had a pidyon haben yet done, and your son has not yet had a pidyon haben? Make it simple. You're a bal tshuva, and you chorus of a tshuva with a firstborn son, and you want to take care of it. You only got five slaim to your name at the moment.
Barry Cohen.
What do? You do yourself or do you do your son?
Did you do it with Barry Cohen like 6 weeks ago? He did for like some 80-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do? Would you do yourself first, or do you do your son first? Who goes first? So the Gemara says, "Who called him livno?"
We had that with the Brit Milah as well.
No, we didn't.
We didn't have something like this. When it was twin sons.
Yeah. That we had. Yeah.
Or an older kid and a younger kid.
Right. Who called him livno? So he goes before the son, meaning your obligation goes first. Sounds simple enough, but there's a machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'no kodmo. The son goes first, and he gives the reason. Shezem mitzvato al aviv, v'zem mitzvat b'no alav. Because there's two mitzvahs on the father, and only one on the son. Right? There's two mitzvahs for the father to do over here, and there's only one on the son, in a sense.
Why does that mean that the son goes first? No, the father goes first.
Well, maybe I shouldn't say there's two, but the point is, zem mitzvato al aviv, v'zem mitzvat b'no alav. He has both his own... How should I say it? He also has his obligation on the son. No, he can't. So that seems to be what's going on over here. So it seems to be that we're talking about he's only going to do his son. That seems to be what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Surprising.
You could say that book. You could say the son's got two obligations, or two people have obligations on the son. The father and the son.
Yeah. No, then that seems to be what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Something along those lines. So Rabbi Yehuda says, son goes first. So Rabbi Yirmiyah steps in and says, wait, let's clarify what exactly is going on over here.
That's also not logical. If he doesn't redeem himself, right, he may miss the chance, whereas his child, younger, will have longer time to...
So that's going to be clarified right now. So Rabbi Yirmiyah steps in and says, wait, let's not get carried away here. Sounds like a huge machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbana. This is fundamental, right? Yirmiyah says, no, not so fundamental. Hakol modin... Who called him livno? No. Everybody agrees that if all he has is five slime and only one person is getting a pidyon haben, everybody agrees that the father should take care of himself first. Everybody agrees. Who called him livno? My taima, mitzvah de gufa yadiva. Because he has a mitzvah on his own goof, he should take care of himself first before he takes care of his son. So when do they argue? Ki pligi hecha deika chamesh meshu abadim v'chamesh bnei chorin. What's meshu abadim and bnei chorin? No.
The coins are
guaranteed. Guaranteed. Yeah, they're more. Yes, that's there's a lien. There's a lien on the money on the five slime. So now, he has some money that is in a lien and some money that is free. Ben Chorin. Okay, so there is where they argue. What do they argue about? Rabbi Yehuda savar milve deksiv b'Torah kiksuva b'shtar damia b'hani chamesh parik livrei. What do they say? So Rabbi Yehuda says, I believe in a general rule, and the general rule that I believe is that milva katuv b'Torah kiktuva b'shtar damya, that where the Torah creates an obligation, this is a milva, this is, you owe money, right? A halva is a loan, but in a general sense, it's a way of creating a debt. Exactly. So the debt that's created by the Torah is like a written contract. Okay? And because it's a written contract, what can happen with it? It can be
enforced.
It can be taken from other money which is already got a lien on it. Because its lien, presumably, the contract, presumably, preceded the original, the new lien. Now, what contract are we talking about? The father, whenever he was born, whatever liens have gotten onto his money, they came after he was born. Right? He got into debt after he was born. So, the Kohen has first dibs on that money. So, tarif lei l'chamesh meshu abadim. That's why azil Kohen, but tarif lei l'chamesh meshu abadim. The Kohen can go and take the five slayim from the people who are currently, you know, in possession of it, or whoever is owed that money.
In respect of who? Him, not her son.
For him. Why not the son?
Because this son same month.
The son came after. Now, potentially, of course, the logic follows that if there had been other loans or whatever debts that got created after his son was born,
they would precede the
that
son.
His son would also, that he could actually take the money from that as well. But we're not talking, we're talking about this case.
Couldn't I
also? Because anytime the son gets, anytime there's a chov, so then that you know, means that it supersedes the Meshu Abadim.
Couldn't I also make the opposite argument that the Pasuk says, Kitivdet Bechor, the Pasuk tells you to be Pode, your son, and therefore you follow the Pasuk. The Pasuk says your son, therefore the son gets priority, according to the Pasuk.
I mean, I think that's what Rabbi Yehuda was saying. But then they concluded.
They concluded
that no, it's not that way because mitzvah de gufa adif. You take care of yourself first, which we learned from tifte tipade. We learned that you have an obligation to do it, just like you have an obligation to do it for your son. You have an equal obligation to do it for yourself if your father doesn't do it. So what's the other side though? The Rabbanan disagree. They say, no. Just because the Torah created a chov, that doesn't mean it's like a shtar. Yeah, the Torah created a chov. You have to do it. You have to fulfill it. But that doesn't mean you can take that money from people who are actually legitimately, financially owed that money. You cannot take from the Meshu Abadim. So that's the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda says, if you have Nechasim Meshu Abadim and Nechasim Bnei Chorin, you can take from the Bnei Chorin and pay for your son. And then you can take from the Meshu Abadim and pay for yourself. Whereas the Chachamim say, you cannot take from the Meshu Abadim. So if all you have is Chamesh Slayim Bnei Chorin, you must use that for
yourself.
Okay. Fine. You know what? Let's pause for a second. Just pause for a second and take a look at the Pnei Yeshua. Because if we don't read the Pnei Yeshua now, then you're going to lose the plot. The Pnei Yeshua asked the basic question. Do you want to figure out what the question is before? It's actually a question that I thought of as I was reading the Gemara. I was bothered by it as I was reading the Gemara. If you look back at the original source, right, the machlok is between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda gave a reason for his position. Right? What was the reason for his position? He said.
He says,
because, no, I love. Right? He gave that as a reason. At the end of the day, the way that the Gemara understands it, according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, They're only arguing about a case where there's nechasim mishu'abadim and nechasim b'nei chorin. And really, the only difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is what? What do they argue about?
The mishu'abadim.
But what are they actually? What principle are they really arguing about according to this Gemara? Milva kaduv b'Torah kiktuva b'shtar danya. Whether or not a chov created by the Torah is like it's written in contract. Where does that leave mitzvat al aviv? Is that mitzvat beno alav? So, Rabbi Yehuda has given a good explanation for why there could have been a machloket between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda, but it's not. It doesn't seem to fit in with what Rabbi Yehuda said himself about his reasoning, right? How do you fit this idea of mitzvat al aviv is mitzvat beno alav into the machloket about milvach ktuv b'Torah ktuv b'shtar danya? You hear the question?
Yeah, but the answer is only because it's got two mitzvahs that the issue arises.
Why?
Because if he only had one, then the question wouldn't arise. So because he has two...
Why not? According to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no problem. There's no problem. The chov existed, and therefore it makes sense. This is the best way to do it. Pay for your son with your free with the free money, because you can, and pay for the non. Nobody loses
because he has that second.
No, that's not true. He can use the mishu'abadim money anyways. Even if there weren't, it would seem. Even if he didn't have a son to pay for, he could have used the mishu'abadim money for himself, because it's owed.
Even if he had no shortfall, he had all the money in the world.
It would seem.
It's considered that debt preceded his.
Exactly.
And he can use it.
Why not? According to the pure version of Rabbi Yehuda. Or maybe not. So take a look at Pnei Yehoshua. Pnei Yehoshua is a wonderful sefer. I meant to look up the author's name. I forgot the author's name. Yehoshua? No, I don't think so. You sure? That's the Drisha or the Prisha. I'm not sure if it's the same person. Just take a look quickly, please. Because I think you might be right, but I'm not sure. Because there's another one. So but the story goes, he writes in his introduction why he wrote the Sefer. It's a fascinating story. So the story goes that...
Yehoshua Falk.
Okay, Baruch Hashem. So Yehoshua Falk, so the story goes that there was a fire in his house, and the whole thing collapsed on him, and he thought he was going to die, and so he made a neder, and he said, I need to defend Rashi from Tosfot, which is ostensibly the purpose of the Pnei Yehoshua, to defend Rashi from Tosfot. So I promise that if I get out of this, and I'm going to write a book to defend Rashi from Tosfot. And he got out.
Generally or on a particular issue?
No, in general. That's what the Sefer Pnei Yehoshua mostly is. It's Tosfot, argues with Rashi, and he tries to defend Rashi from Tosfot. In general, that's what it is. So that's why he wrote it. Okay, so here, B'dir Ramasa K'ksub Vashtar. So he says, "Sharei mitzvat b'no alav yoter mitzvato." That's not him. That's actually Rashi. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi in the Dibra Masel Kiksuva Bashtar Damya, right? Rashi says at the top of the page, "Uba pidyon atzmo haya mechuyav kodem sheshiabad karka otav." Right. This is what we were saying. He was chayav in his own pidyon before he was meshaabed his karka. Ve'yitrof et alukuchot, and the kohen goes and takes the money from the lukuchot. Hilkach b'chamesh b'nei choridik aparik levrei. So the other five, the ones that are free, he can use for his son. The ein ze ona'a. Because this is not, and all of this is not ona'a. There's an aleph over here. It should be ona'a l'lekuchot. This is not it's not oppression, but it's not considered unethical practice towards the lekuchot. Sharei mitzvat b'no alav yoter mitzvato. Because the mitzvah of his ben is more important than the mitzvah of him. How are we supposed to read this Rashi? What's he talking about? So if we combine our question with what you guys are saying, then that's the answer. You want to try to say it out loud before we read it?
Well, if the mitzvah on the ben is more important, and he can only use the money to the mishra abadim money to redeem himself, no,
it
doesn't work.
Okay, so let's take a look. So Pnei Yehoshua says as follows. He says basically that Rashi answers my question.
Oh no, it does work.
Okay,
because he has to do himself first.
Mm-hmm.
But the mitzvah, he can only use the Mishra Badi money on himself.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore,
Unless he can use that money on himself, he can't do his son.
Yeah. So it's basically, I mean, was it, Rael, were you pointing out that, you know, what if there was no other money, right? Would he still be allowed to use the money that's Meshuabad instead of using his Bnei Chorin money for himself, right? So here's the answer. Pirush. Abagavdu l'chuli alma, mitzvah degufa adif. Everybody agrees that he has to take care of himself. Hainu hecha de'i ev shar l'kayim shneim. That's in a case where he can't do both, as Rabbi Yirmiyah pointed out. Masha ein kein hecha de'yesh b'yadu l'kayim shneim, yesh l'kayim t'chila pidyon b'no she'ikar mitzvah to'olav. But when he can, he should do first the ikar, he should do a pidyon ben of his son. Now, are we only talking about a sequencing issue? No. Why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda explicitly say that his reason is milvachdu b'bashtar, like Rabbi Yirmiyah tells us it is? So the reason is because if it wasn't for the fact that mitzvah b'no alav, thereby making it more important, he would have no justification for grabbing the money from the little cult. Paul, this is what you were saying?
Yeah, because he couldn't use the free money on himself.
Right.
Because then he couldn't use the Mashabadim money on the child.
Yes.
So it's only because he can use the Mashabadim money on himself that he can do the more important mitzvah.
I would have said the opposite. It's only because he has to use the free money for the ben that he also must use the Mashabadim money. The Matzin Rebbe, Hainachti lecha makom kekushi at atosot. Aval keva de'ika nami haitaima de'ikar mitzvato alav. So Rashi, the leka ona lelakuchot mishum dahad amar rabbanan eni from mishuchas mishuabadim takanta the rabbanan ba'alma. He says, first of all, the idea that you're not allowed, that you're not supposed to lachatchila take money away from people that you owe them, you know, from mishuabadim when you have available bnei chorin money. That's first of all a takanta the rabbanan midaraisa. There's no problem with that, but the takanta the rabbanan only applies when there's no mitzvah going the opposite direction. In other words, the rabbis didn't say that you can't take money from the Meshuabadim when there is a mitzvah to do so. You can when there's a mitzvah to do so. And given that you must, that if you were to take the money for yourself from the Bnei Chorin, you would no longer be able to be pulled to your son. So this is an extreme situation. So that's why you're allowed to be ma'aneh, so to speak, the lekuchot.
Would Rabbi Yehuda say masa? You can take from the lekuchot.
According to him, potentially,
it's a mitzvah,
if you have no other money to take it from, if you have no bnei chorin, then
I'm not aware of us.
I mean, if you had, I mean,
you've got a mitzvah of masa.
No, I mean, giving maaser is not exactly.
You mean it's not mitzvah. Specific
it's
enough.
Not. I mean, there's no chov. There's no chov involved with miser. You can't give miser with money that belongs to, you know, that you owe to somebody else.
Why not? It's a mitzvah.
There's a mitzvah kiyumit of staka. There's no chov on you to give miser.
What about
that's a different share. What? Matana Levioni might be a different story.
Yeah,
Matana Levioni might be a different story.
But that's not a percentage. But Mars also implies you have money.
Sorry?
Mars also implies that you have money.
Or had money.
This could be all you left.
No, well, you probably
spend the rest on the horses.
It's not an obligation.
There's something I'm missing here. I'm sorry. This Mishuabadim money, who does this belong to?
It's his money pledged to someone else.
So it's not my money then.
It's my money.
You have a lien on my money.
It doesn't matter. You have a prior lien. You lost your house to the casino. You lost your house to the casino. Then you go back to the casino and say, "I'm sorry, I have never had a pidyon on a ben, so I need five."
No, it's still your money. You've pledged it all the time, security.
Even if not, even if they actually have the money, you can be torif.
No,
from
not
the
if it's their money. Not if I'm
even if you've already given them your karka.
From the
yes, even if you've given them your karka as a way of fulfilling.
So one sec. If you've done a pidyon on your son.
I mean, I'm not sure what you mean by pledge, Paul. I mean, you've said, I give up. I give up. Take my field.
The minute he gives it over, it's no longer his.
Right. But he still has it's still in the books. There's a separate another person has a prior claim on it.
But it's exactly correct.
It's a mortgage. Yes, it's a mortgage.
Just in terms of the legalities, I think what it means is they it's a pledge. They have a right to hold it until he redeems it.
Correct. But security.
But it doesn't belong to them. They can't. It's not their money yet.
It's security
for a loan. Because if it was their money, I think that's something else. In other words, if I paid somebody money, anyone...
I can't speak confidently, but the fact that there's another chov that still has his hands on that money, on that property.
But let's say I went to a shop and paid somebody something. You can't then say, well, let me take that back for...
You can. Of course you can. It happens all the time in Allah.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. That's not what it's talking about. It's finished. It's done. It's yours.
No, it's not true. By the same token, if I sell something that's not mine, right? Are you going to say afterwards, doesn't matter, it belongs to him now? No, of course not. If I steal somebody's car and then I borrow somebody's car and then I sell it to somebody else,
the person who paid for it,
he can't say to the original owner of the car, sorry, I bought it, it's mine now.
Why does the Gemara say, why doesn't it say, any money I've ever paid to anyone, I can go and take back?
That is what's going on.
It's not what it says. It says that's money that's Mishua Abadim, which is pledge security. I think.
Okay.
Because otherwise, you could go and reclaim any money. I'm pretty sure that you can. According to the way that I'm allowed to take the money back for myself is because I've sold it to my son. And therefore it wouldn't be on an earth to take it back.
Exactly.
If I've already done a pidyon haben to my son, just not done a pidyon haben to myself, according to the Matei Yoshua, I wouldn't be able to take the money back because
If I only had Mishua Badim, then I think I still would be able to.
If I only had Mishua Badim.
But I wouldn't be able to use Mishua Badim in lieu of Bnei Chorin.
But let's say I only had Mishua Badim.
Then you'd be able to use that. Of course you can.
Why?
Why not?
Because Bnei Yoshua is saying I only get the koach to get that money back. It's because of the, and the fact that it's not on our arm is because I couldn't do myself till I did my son.
No.
Why I've got the koach take it back to myself.
No. Rabbi Yehuda only needs the mitzvah beno alav. He only needs that to explain why you don't just have to use the bnei chorin for yourself. Because if your obligation for your son is not greater than yours, so then you should just use that money for yourself, the bnei chorin, and then the Mishua Badim is not going to be available to anybody.
Wouldn't it be on that in that case? What questions Bnei Yoshua coming to answer? How can you take that money back?
Right.
Once it's already been given to someone else, he's saying you could take it back.
Because let's say the Rabbanan, right? The Rabbanan seem to, let's say the Rabbanan even agree with Rabbi Yehuda, right? So they only say that you can't do it. What he's saying, Rabbi Yehuda's saying you're doing, is the only reason because you can't take from Mishua Badim. Right, because why can't you take Mishua Badim? Then because Pidyon HaBen is not a chov, it's not a real chov, not like that shtar chov. But Rabbi Yehuda says I need two things to get me to do this. I need number one, I need it to be a real chov that gives me as the father the ability to be put on myself from the Mishua Badim. But even that I wouldn't be allowed to do. Under normal circumstances, if I had Bnei Chorin available to me. So if I had Bnei Chorin available to me, I would have to use Bnei Chorin. Now, if I didn't have Bnei Chorin available to me, I would be able to do it. It doesn't matter why I don't have Bnei Chorin available to me. If all I had is Mishua Badim, of course I'd be able to do it. Of course I would, because it's a Bilbach Duk Mishtar. The only reason that the Bnei Chorin are not available to me in this case, though, is because my obligation towards my son is greater than my obligation towards myself. But if that wouldn't be the case, I wouldn't be allowed to do this because the Lukuchas would say, no, use the Bnei Chorin for yourself, and then that's it. Okay. Okay, let's go weiter in the Gemara. It's good energy. Let's go weiter in the Gemara. Tana Rabbanu. Liftot et bno v'la'alot. Where'd I go? Well, alot daregel. What happens if you can only do one of two things? You only have enough money. You live in, you live in New York, and you only have enough money to either refund your son or pay for a flight to Israel.
Oh.
Okay. So those are your options. So, what do you do first? Poder's Beno. V'acharkach Olu L'Regel, the Chachamim say.
He's the
what is that?
Yeah, same author. I'll tell you about him later.
So, he didn't write Ema Bar Mitzvicha.
No, he
translated it. So,
still in Israel because of him.
So what if you have one option and you can only do one option? So what do you do? So the Rabbanan, once again, they say Poder et Beno, v'acharkach Olu L'Regel. Okay. So it's not really one or the other. It's, you know, what do you use the first piece of money for? So first you're supposed to be put to your ben, and then you go aliyah l'regel. Rabbi Yehuda omer olu l'regel v'chaka kvod ibno. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, aliyah l'regel goes before pidyon haben. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda says, aliyah l'regel goes before pidyon haben.
These two arguments assume that you have money for both. It doesn't say...
Yeah. This time it's what goes before.
You do this first and you do that second.
Yeah, this one is... They both really are like that. You really have money for both. It's just a matter of prayer.
Is it financial clarity? Are we talking about financial need for the regal or just what you should do given time constraints?
Given time constraints. Given time constraints. Which comes first? They want to know which one comes first. What do you do first?
If you can do them both.
Yes. Okay. You first do Ola the regal and then you do Podet Bino. And once again, Rabbi Yehuda gives his reason.
Is time,
Shezu mitzvah veret, vizu mitzvah sheino veret. Rabbi, this is very simple. Aliyah l'regel. If you spend your time doing pidyon haben, let's say potentially, you know, if you only have five slime right now, and it takes five slime for you to get to Israel. So not to get to Israel, to get to Yerushalayim. If you're outside of Israel, you don't have to go on aliyah l'regel. So if you're within Modi'in and between Modi'in and Yerushalayim, and it's a five slime bus fare to get to Yerushalayim. Okay, so there's a chance that if you're po to your ben right now, then you won't have five slime and you won't be able to get five slime to go on Aliyah L'Regel. Maybe you woke up and you remembered to go on Aliyah L'Regel at the last moment and you're going to miss your chance. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Aliyah L'Regel comes first.
This is talking about Aliyah L'Regel, not making Aliyah.
No. Yeah. That's why it's Overet. It's between, you know, it's Pesach and Sukkot and Shavuot.
Wait, so new concept, then you could say you got the chiyuv to be put at the sun or whatever else. At this instant right now.
Yes.
And if it's not Pesach, Sukkot, or Shavuot, I don't have to go right now to Yerushalayim.
That's true. So?
So I should do what's available right now?
No, this is on regal. This is obviously on...
So the rest of the year though, or what?
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about on a Stam Sunday.
No, a week before Shavuot, right?
Right.
I've got the opportunity next week to go to do Aliyah.
Good, so that is a different question.
Here, I can do this right now.
Look, that's Ein Mavir Na Mitzvot, which I was going to make the point that, you know, we have a lot of phrases in Halakha that sound the same. And I remember Moshe Targan, when he was in Shifte a few years ago, he gave a shiur on this, on differentiating between all these terms. You have Ein Mavir Na Mitzvot. Mm-hmm. You have Zeh Kodem Lezeh. You have, now I'm blanking on the other cases, but basically you have all kinds of rules with regards to when you have a clash between mitzvot. But there's all different cases. For example, Daniel, the point that you're making is that what happens if you have a mitzvah in front of you right now, which, you know, let's say we call it a small mitzvah, and if you do the small mitzvah, though, you won't be able to do the bigger mitzvah later. Right? So what do you do? So the answer is,
you do
the one that's in front of you right now. In Mavir Na Mitzvot. Yes, it's similar to that, right? You do the mitzvah that's in front of you right now. But then there's other ideas of what happens if you have two mitzvahs in front of you. So that seems to be what's going on over here. You have two mitzvahs in front of you. Which one do you do first? Which one do you do first? Right? And he says, Rabbi Yehuda says, you know, the zu mitzvah overet, v'zu mitzvah she'eino overet.
Now, even actually that you know it's coming, you know the pidyon haben is in 7 days' time,
yeah, I mean you shouldn't be mevater on the mitzvah that's in front of you because of the fact that you might not be able to do the mitzvah later. Everybody, that's a separate point.
What does he mean, overet? Sorry.
Well, the other regal is time bound, right? You may miss the chance.
You can't do it.
You may miss your chance.
If you miss Aliyah L'Regel, okay, it's gone.
Shavuos is last week, eh?
Yeah.
Daniel, you said big mitzvah and small mitzvah, that was just for the sake of the example. We're not here saying that one of them is bigger than the other.
Over here?
Yeah.
No, over here, the only value that interests Rabbi Yehuda is mitzvah overet, v'zum mitzvah sheino overet.
Right.
Why? Because they're both in front of you at the same time. So he decides that the fact that it's zman-based, therefore you have to do it right now. Now, Bishlam Rabbi Yehuda could the Kamer Taima. We know the reason for Rabbi Yehuda, but now.
So is it an issue like a Brit where the earlier you do it, the better? Like if it's
So that's a separate thing.
On the 31st,
that's the reason Makdim, that was the other example of Tarakan gave. That's the reason Makdim in the mitzvah. That's another rule about mitzvah. Right.
You could also be a Brit. I mean, you would. How would you hold it if it was a Brit?
If it was a Brit versus. The reason Makdim in the mitzvah applies to all mitzvah, not just a Brit. It just.
You'd say, Eitha, you've got enough money for to either pay them well or go on Aliyah Tarego.
Aliyah Tarego.
The reason I didn't do this, but doesn't mean I'm going to rush. I'm going to do the brit on the fifth day.
It seems like the other regal would win, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda, we have the reason. The Rabbanan, my time, why did the Rabbanan disagree? Rabbi Yehuda's right. Mitzvah veret. Aren't you worried that we're going to miss out on the other regal? They say, yeah, but we have a pasuk. Damakra, the kol b'rochor b'nachatif de v'hadar lo yuru pnei rekam. It says Kol b'chor b'nechatif deh at the beginning of the pasuk, and then it says V'lo yera'u panei reikam, which reminds us of
Aliyah
Regel. It says Aliyah Regel. You're not supposed to come Aliyah Regel without a korban. Okay, so in other words, one goes sequentially before the other in the pasuk. The Pidyon Haben goes before Aliyah Regel in the pasuk. Therefore, in reality, when they come up, the two of them come together, you would do one before the other. Very specific, right? Seems strange that it would be so specific.
What's the connection between these two?
In the same pasuk.
It's strange that it's in the same pasuk.
Why?
In the context of Parashat Ki Tisa.
Right, yeah.
It's over there.
Actually, if you read that pasuk, then that could only apply if you've got money for both. Because you can't do the second part if you do the first part.
I don't know if you have to read it as first do this, then do that.
No,
it's just saying priority-wise.
This interpretation is, it means do this, then that.
No, it doesn't have to mean that.
It says Be'achaka.
It's using the order of
life. Right, but that's what it says. It says which one comes first, you do the pidyon, then you do Aliyat Regel. That must assume you can do both.
That's what it does mean.
You go on Aliyat Regel with your pidyon's ben. But if you can only do one, then it doesn't follow that you do the Aliyah.
But why not? How do you know that it means sequentially that you should do one and then the other and not just this one takes priority and the other one doesn't?
What it means, it can only mean that if you can do both. Otherwise the pasuk isn't being fulfilled. If you don't have the money for both, then you can't do Aliyat Regel. Right? If you pidyon first. So it doesn't follow.
If you're not going to have the... Pasuk says we're talking about Pesach. We're talking about Pesach actually.
And our case doesn't work with the pasuk.
No, the pasuk says two things. It says A, then it says B.
Correct.
And it's not trying to say. You can only do B once you've done A, or A is related to B. It's just saying there's A and there's B.
No, but you're trying to use that pasuk to say you've got to do the ben first before the what's it?
That's why
before the Aliyat Regel. Why? Because you have to go with your pidyon ben on your Aliyat Regel.
Why do you need that reason? Why is it connected? The pasuk says do this, and the pasuk says then do that.
It just has to say
be connected between the two. It's not saying you can't do that to
the both. The pasuk has two separate statements.
If you cannot do the second, you're not fulfilling the pasuk.
No, but that's not. First of all, it's not.
No, you're not, because you don't have money to do that.
No, that's not.
But that's not the. That's not the point.
First out of the two.
Correct, but it's only an issue if you can't do both.
No, that's not the case. Why do you think it's only
example?
Because you said if you've only got money for one,
yeah,
do the one
which do
first.
You do?
No,
but you have said the one you do the Aliyah Regel.
Yes,
because right. Whereas now we're saying no, you do the pidyon first. There's an order.
Because in the order of the pasuk, pidyon ben comes before
Aliyah Regel.
That doesn't mean that we should read the pasuk as first do pidyon ben, then go Aliyah Regel.
If you haven't done
it, just means pidyon ben precedes Aliyah Regel in priority.
If you haven't done pidyon
ben, you say.
If you haven't done pidyon ben, you've still got a chiyuv. Kol b'chor
b'nechatif deh. The end of the pasuk says kol b'chor b'nechatif deh v'lo yaro panei rekam. That's all. That's all it says.
If you haven't done Pinjon HaBen, you've still got a chiyuv to do Aliyah LeRegel. They're not impingent on each other, which is...
No, but Paul's pointing out what happens if you don't have the money for both.
I don't think the writer is talking about having only one. Just one precedes the other. Not if you could only do one of them. Because if you have both of them...
So I'll tell you what, full disclosure, I'm looking at the footnote over here in the thing, and it's Machlokas. Exactly about this. The Shita Lonot Elimi says exactly like Paul says, that this is only talking about a case where you have enough to pay for both, but not if you only have enough to pay for one. But the Rashash disagrees, and the Rashash says, no, it's just telling you that one of them as Kadima to the other, but it's always going to be Aliyah LeRegel.
Isn't there a practical issue of how long each one takes as well? As to which comes to hand first. You could, if you're not short of resources, the pidyon HaBen takes a minute.
That's what you're saying in general. Why not just do it that way?
Why would you? If it's not a, if you don't have a resource constraint.
Okay.
What's the issue?
But we have a rule. We have a rule. We have a rule for how to do mitzvot.
If you don't have a resource, that passage tells you you do it.
Right. If you can only do it. But if you can do both, it would seem.
How do we understand that you only have money for one in this writer?
Yeah. No,
that's we don't. Yeah, we don't.
Well, you do first. Not that you can't do one.
I agree. I agree. I'm with Rashash on this.
I don't understand where it's written that you can only do one of them in this writer.
Well, that's how we started.
It was a previous writer.
Yeah, but
you could only do one. But the Tanu Rabbanan now, it's written that you when you have both of them, what do you do first?
Yeah, but there's an argument about what it means.
Yeah, I'm not sure how. Who was it explained that you only have?
The Shita Lodolevi says we are only talking about when you have enough money for both, and that it's just a matter of what goes in front of the other.
And what's the other view?
And the Rashash says no, we're also talking about a case where you can only do one, and even in that case, you only do the Aliyah LeRegel. Sorry, you either do only do the Aliyah LeRegel or you only do the Pidyon HaBen.
So I'm not sure whether Rashash sees this in the Brayta.
Oh, so I am. Okay. No, I think that it extends all the way to there.
It follows through from what we were just discussing, which is where Rabbi Huda said you do Aliyah LeRegel first.
It's a question of whether if one of them is you know, takes precedence over the other, or one of them just goes before the other. Because Rabbi Yehuda, but think about it. Rabbi Yehuda is concerned. Clearly, Rabbi Yehuda is obviously talking about where, or not obvious, but it seems like Rabbi's talking about where you don't have enough money for both, because he says, Zumitzover,
that's why you do one first, because you can postpone you have enough money, but what do you do now? If you do Pidyon HaBen, you're going to miss out on Shavuos. So what do you do?
Because Yoel is saying maybe you have enough time to Pidyon HaBen, but if you do Pidyon HaBen first, then you're going to miss the bus. You're going to miss the bus.
There's no going around.
If you do Pidyon HaBen, then you're going to miss the bus. No, you're in Modi'in, you're waiting for the bus, and you don't, and you realize, oh my gosh, my son just turned 30, his 31st birthday, 31st day of his life, and I don't have a coin. So you can either go running around trying to find the coin, and then you're going to miss your bus.
On the bus.
In Yerushalayim. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe that's why you should go first.
There is a different question that I wanted answered over here. This is a question that actually is asked originally by the Bir Halacha. Other Achronim ask it, but also it's addressed by Rav Moshe Feinstein. This is actually from the fifth volume of Or HaChaim in the Rav Moshe, which is a posthumous work. Okay, so this is published after he died from his Igros. And he first quote, I was going to put the Mishnah Berurah on here, but he actually quotes it, so I don't have to. And they are both answering an interesting question. And it's a question that everybody should have been asking. If we're talking about situations where this is all the money that the person has, right? Then what question should arise?
Shouldn't Boston do the...
Shouldn't what?
The pigeon.
What about it?
There's not... I mean, today, almost not...
There's another question. Should he use it for something else?
What's the rule about spending money on mitzvahs?
You shouldn't bank
20%.
That's yeah, that's correct. 20%. I'm a vazvez, ayavazvez, yosar michomish. Okay, that's the Shulchan Aruch mentions this in Tafreishin and Vav. We're talking about buying an etrog and how much money you should spend on an etrog. You never spend more than a fifth of your money on an etrog. You're really not supposed to. So there are rules about this. Okay, so the Mishnah Brua and the Bir Halacha asks. He says the Rama says ein tzarich levazvez al mitzvah yosar michomish shachasav mehadim forish bekedushin. Says so the Bir Halacha says, but what about Ara Gemara? Ara Gemara seems to say that if you only have five slayim, you have to spend it on a pidyon haben.
Maybe that's his 20%.
What do you mean?
Oh,
he only has 20% to spend on mitzvahs in general.
This is 25 is his 20%.
That would be a decent answer. Not the answer that anybody gave. That's a decent answer. It's not the simplest reading of the Gemara. You would expect the Gemara to say something like that, but it doesn't.
You assume the Gemara knows that it's...
Okay. Definitely a possible answer, but not the answer that Mishnah Berurah gives.
Is it because it's a mitzvah? You're redeeming something. It wasn't yours to begin with.
Interesting. Good. So that would have been my answer. And surprisingly, you'll tell me if you think of Moshe saying this, but the Bir Halacha definitely doesn't. The Bir Halacha, Chavetz Chaim.
Yeah. The principle is a mitzvah to redeem his son, but he doesn't have to redeem it. He can leave him with a coin. He has no money.
No, he has to redeem
him. If he doesn't like him.
He has to redeem him.
If he has no money.
That happened to me once.
If he has no money, he can't do anything. You got left with the cat.
Sorry.
So you understand the question? Yeah. You've only got five slime. Why is he spending it on this? He shouldn't be spending on anything.
If the answer is your answer, then how does that work with Aliyah Rebbe? Or do we say...
Good. So I let's get back to it. First, let's first see the two answers that we have over here, and then I think I can answer. So the Bir Halacha, so his answer, after he has a very long, involved answer, I just took what Moshe wrote about it. So he basically says, Masha Tiritz, this is the third line, Demisha Ein Larak Hamisha Slaim V'Oved L'Parnasato Lo Yurama Tzavoy Mikayim Et HaMitzvah V'Ein L'Chush Shema Yani V'Yitzarech L'Biot Ein Arachan Klas. So the Mishnah Berurah, his answer was, he says he gave a fundamental answer about how this rule of Havam Vazvez works. And it's actually pretty mechudishtik and pretty extreme. He basically says, when do we say Havam Vazvez? When we say Havam Vazvez, when do we say you don't have to spend more than a fifth? When it's going to cause you to be poor. When you're going to spend 50% of your money, and now you're going to go into the poorhouse, you're going to have to go on welfare, and you're not going to go, you know, and your children are going to go starving, right? That's when we say that. That's the purpose of that, you know, v'chai behem. Right? You're not supposed to put yourself into poverty for the sake of mitzvahs, generally speaking. Okay? So the Mishnah Berurah, so he says, but maybe this is a case where, you know what? He's a farmer. Yes, this is the only five slime that he has right now. But tomorrow he'll have another five slime.
Tomorrow he'll sell his crop.
Yeah. He's not gonna be poor from this. We're talking about either somebody who's not going to become poor because of this. This is just his money, but he'll make more money tomorrow, so it's not a problem.
Cash flow problem.
Or, alternatively, if you look inside, he says, or the person's already poor. Right? If the person's already poor, if all he has is five slime, this is not going to be what breaks the bank. Right? Which is also an interesting point. You know, if all he's got is five slime, then giving up the five slime is really not going to hurt him or help him really that much. I say it's extreme because it's like, I don't know. That's going to open the doors wide open, right?
That answer doesn't really work because it implies that the halacha doesn't apply to the poor person, and it does.
It
the halacha that he shouldn't spend.
Well, the Chavetz Chaim thinks that it doesn't. That's the point. The Chavetz Chaim thinks that it doesn't.
That's what I'm saying.
Which is a chiddush.
Obviously, the Chavetz Chaim's right, but
it's not obvious that he's right. That's his claim.
I'm trying to understand it because to say. Or just because it's poor, then...
No, understand his reasoning. His reasoning is, it's based on... The whole principle... Exactly, the principle is to prevent people from overspending on mitzvahs, causing themselves to become poor. So he's saying it doesn't apply to people who have a steady income, and it doesn't apply to people who are already poor.
But we don't take the reason to overturn a mitzvah. In other words, the Chofetz Chaim is explaining the reason, and then abolishing the mitzvah.
It's a Din Darabanan anyways. We do. This is the Darabana. We're trying to go according to the rationale of the reason. There's no pasuk in the Torah that says you can't spend more than 5. Yeah. 50.
There's lots of
what?
It was Erev Shabbat.
Yeah.
And he had just the 5. So.
Right. So that's where things get funny. That's where things get fun. Oh, Arab Shabbat. Oh, wait, so
we're going to have no kiddush.
Right. Right. So that, I would say, forget that. What about spending money for challah on Arab Shabbos? Right? We have halachot about that. Right? We have halachot about what you should, what you shouldn't do. And that's where things break down. Where Moshe actually says, okay, but the Stimat HaPoskim is not like this. The Stimat HaPoskim is that you don't have to spend all of your money. Meaning, if you only have 5 kopeks, right, you don't buy challah. You buy, you know, the minimum that you need in order to eat. You don't go out of your way to do mitzvot, even if you're poor. You find that, you know, across halacha. So Rav Moshe says, it doesn't seem like we pass like this, Chavetz Chaim. It doesn't seem to be the mainstream view. Okay? So what does Rav Moshe offer us? Moshe offers us a different answer, and I thought he was going along the lines of what I was going to say and what Mike was saying, but I don't really think that he's saying that. So you'll tell me. So he says, he makes an important chiluk. He says, there are two kinds of mitzvot. You can put them into two categories. There are mitzvot that are object-oriented, but in order to get the object, you have to
spend money.
Object-oriented, not programming, but not like C++, but object-oriented in the sense that you have to get the object, for example, an etrog, okay? The mitzvah is not to buy an etrog. The mitzvah is to shake the etrog lulav. But in order to shake the lulav and etrog, you need to buy the etrog. But the buying is not part of the mitzvah. It's a extra mitzvah at most, but it's not the mitzvah itself. But then there are other mitzvot that the mitzvah itself is to spend money. For example, charity, pidyon haben. So Rav Moshe wants to suggest that when the mitzvah is
to spend the money,
then there are no limits because that's the mitzvah. So it doesn't matter whether the mitzvah will take up more than a fifth of your money. That's the mitzvah. But if the mitzvah is to purchase the equipment if there is a mitzvah that requires equipment and you're going to be spending your money to just purchase the equipment, then since you're not anyways being mekayim the mitzvah when you purchase the object, there's no requirement to spend more than a fifth of your money.
So would Rabbi Yehuda say, Aliyah Regal, paying is the mitzvah? Or
no.
The
why would he?
The mitzvah?
Why would he?
Because Aliyah he said he comes first.
No, hold on. So
when you've only got five.
We're conflating things over here. And no, he would not say that you
would have. We're talking
good.
About a cake.
Excellent, excellent. This is your original question. Okay, so you were going to ask me on a different version of the answer. But the answer to this would be, just because something might take priority over something else. Okay, I'd say it like this. You know that there's a law of transitivity in math? If A is greater than B and B is greater than C, then A is greater than C. Okay? So in sports and halakha, that doesn't work. Okay? In sports, it doesn't work because the Giants beat the Jets and the Jets beat the Bengals doesn't mean that the Giants are going to beat the Bengals. It doesn't mean that, right? That's how it works. That's not how it works.
No one
okay?
knows what you're talking about.
Okay, just because Manchester United beat Chelsea and Chelsea beat Real Madrid doesn't mean that Manchester United is going to beat Real Madrid. We understand that, okay? It doesn't work like that. So too in halakha. Just because I'm actually able to use, let's say, all of my money to do pidyon haben, but Aliyah LaRegel beats Pidyon HaBen, doesn't mean that I can spend all my money for Aliyah LaRegel.
Correct, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't work, because Rabbi Yehuda says, in a case where you've only got 5 kopecks,
So you're wondering why would Rabbi Yehuda say
the only reason he could spend it is because Pidyon HaBen is the type of mitzvah that in the mitzvah is spending the
money. So you're taking the Chavetz Chaim's original question, and instead of asking about Pidyon HaBen, ask it about Aliyah LaRegel. Fair question.
So
I hear your question.
Categorizing the mitzvahs in the same way, though.
Okay.
Well, that,
right?
You could say that's
yeah.
not which one you can go out and
say. You're not the cost of getting it.
Say again?
The cost of the carbon.
That's not the mitzvah itself. Paul's point is that the answer that Rav Moshe is giving, the answer that Rav Moshe is giving specifically in this case is only going to help for Pidyon HaBen. That's the vulnerability here. It's not going to help for all the other ad. And our answer as well, I would have given a different answer. I would have said that the reason why you're allowed to spend more than a fifth of your money for Pidyon HaBen is because it's not a mitzvah that you're doing, it's a chov that you're repaying. Nobody would say that if a poor person owes all of his money to somebody else that he no longer has to pay just because, well, he doesn't have to be making the mitzvah of paying back a loan. No, it's not a mitzvah, it's a chov. The truth is that Rav Moshe Sternbach uses this. They ask, for Hanukkah candles, right? We actually, by the way, that's where I originally came up with this metaphor about transitivity, because they have a similar thing by Hanukkah candles and by Shabbos candles. Everybody knows that if you're standing there on a Friday afternoon and you only have enough money for Hanukkah candles or Shabbos candles. What do you spend it on? Everybody knows you spend it on Shabbos candles. Why? Shalom Bayis, exactly. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. What if that's all of your money? Okay? You only have $1. Okay? Now, if it was a regular Friday afternoon, right, would you have to spend $1 for Shabbos candles?
No.
No, because Shabbos candles is not something that overrides Hamavazves. The thing is that for Hanukkah candles on a regular Tuesday night, Hanukkah candles, I have to spend all of my money because of Pursum Anissa. I have to sell my shirt off my back, literally, right? So Rosh Hashanah point, Arbach points this out, so I don't understand. What's going to actually end up happening on a Friday afternoon? He thinks what's going to happen is I'm going to actually sell my shirt to buy Hanukkah candles, but then end up using them for Shabbos candles.
Which you wouldn't have needed in the first.
Which I wouldn't have bought on any other Friday afternoon. Now, some people blow this up and just say, no. It's a Kal v'chomer. If you have to buy Hanukkah candles, then you definitely have to buy Shabbos candles. But that's not the pashtus of what the Rambam says or what the Mishnah Berurah says. But the point is, over there, that's a breakdown of the law of transitivity. Once again, right? I have to spend all my money for Hanukkah candles, but Shabbos candles are more important, and I don't have to spend all my money for Shabbos candles. There's a funny thing going on over there. Anyways, the point was actually to get to the Hanukkah candles. The Hanukkah candles, you have to spend all your money on them. Why? So there's two famous answers that we find amongst the Achronim. One is Rav Salavechik, who says that because of Pursum Anissa. Fine, let's leave that aside for a second. Rav Moshe Sternbach offers a different answer, which is a little more jushy. He says, well, what's Hanukkah about? Hanukkah is about us being thankful to Hashem for saving us and for doing a miracle for us. So what do? In return, we perform the mitzvah of Hanukkah candles. So it's like we're repaying a chov. So because we're repaying a chov, so you have to spend all your money on that because you're repaying Hashem. Okay, it's a little drushy. I'm not sure why Hanukkah candles. You could probably have extended that to other mitzvot, but he does it specifically for Hanukkah candles. So I would have said, like Mike did, that Pidyon HaBen is not a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah per se. It's not just a mitzvah. It's a chov. That's why I have to spend all my money. But it does leave me open and vulnerable to Paul's question, which is, how do you deal with Eliyahu LeRegel, assuming that we're talking about a case where you don't have any other money at all? It could be that it's just money that you have available to you. It could be that you only have this money available to you. It's not like it's actually going to make you poor. But then the whole question disappears. Fine. Good. Okay. Now we're going to get to the main part of the Gemara. Okay, this is where I was hoping we were going to get to. Lalamdo, sorry, actually no, wait, one more line before we get there. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, another Braita. Maybe we'll save the rest of the sheet for next time. Tana Rabbanan, Minayin Shimayulo Chamisha Banim Mechamesh Nashim. How do I know that if a man has five sons from five different women, that he's obligated to do Pidyon HaBen five different times? Shachayev lifdot kulan. Talmud Lomar, kol b'chor b'necha tifteh. Because it says, kol b'chor b'necha tifteh. Kol every b'chor. So the Gemara says, pshita. Of course, I mean, why'd even ask the question?
It's five sons from five women?
Five sons. Five firstborn sons from five different women. Married five different women, and he had...
But why did he lose his b'chor? He doesn't have any money to do pidyon of it.
But each one is, it's kol b'chor b'necha tifteh. So every single b'chor, why would it say kol b'chor b'necha? Just bincha, b'chorcha. I could have said b'chorcha tifteh.
It's a firstborn to him.
Yeah, exactly.
But then it would have said b'chorcha tifteh. Why? What's kol b'chor b'necha tifteh? Pshita. And the answer is, well, b'peta rechem tal rachmana. Sorry, pshita b'peta rechem tal rachmana. Of course, it's peta. It's actually not the diuk that I said. There's a separate diuk that you could have made. It says petarechem, right? Petarechem means it's in every single one, right? It's every single woman. It goes by the firstborn from the womb. So if it's the firstborn of her womb, then it should be a b'chor. So mao detema, what I would have thought? I would have thought that nelef b'chor b'chor minachala. Malahalan reshit ono, afkan reshit ono. Elsewhere where b'chor comes up, where else does b'chor come up? By his Yerusha. And over there it says, B'chor reshit ono, right? Which is the first of your strength. There's only one B'chor, right? A man only has one B'chor in terms of Yerusha. B'chor ono, reshit B'chor ono. So therefore, you would have thought that you only have one B'chor over here, you have only one B'chor over there.
It's strange that it's her Rechem, but she doesn't have to give you redemption.
Yeah. Quite deep, right.
But it still says kol. Even if it's b'chor, what would you have then thought kol was there for?
Yeah.
No, I mean, maybe that's the drasha. In other words, that maybe petarechem wouldn't have been enough. Right? Petarechem is not enough, in fact, they say. Petarechem is not enough to tell you that it goes by each woman, because competing with that is reshit b'chor ono. B'chor reshit ono. Whatever. That's reshit ono. So that's why we need kol b'chor b'necha tifteh to tell us that it actually is according to all of your b'chor.
So the
every
b'chor
single
for redemption is a different type of b'chor, obviously.
Well, the rules are different. It's a different sphere of halakha.
It's not b'chor in the sense that we understand.
Right,
it's the b'chor of the mother rather than the b'chor of the father.
Right. Well, b'chor of the mother and the father, yeah.
Well, it's not the father, because if you take Yaakov, Reuven was the b'chor, right?
Yeah.
But they were b'chor
of in terms of Nachala.
Right?
In terms of Nachala.
Yeah, just as we understand it.
Right.
So it's, and this is a different b'chor for redemption, right?
The combination between the husband and the wife. Yeah. Okay, so you know what? The rest of it we'll save for next time. Because it's late
next
already.
Next week we're going to start 10 seconds.
Shaka.